Hi everyone, this is John Mandrola from the heart.org on Medscape, and I'm here at the American College of Cardiology Sessions, and I'm very pleased to have Dr. Raj Makkar, who is a principal investigator and senior author of an important paper looking at the RESOLVE and SAVORY registries and the possibility of subclinical leaflet thrombosis on bioprosthetic valves. It was simultaneously published in The Lancet. Welcome.
Thank you, John.
Can you tell us about the background of this study?
Well, what we know is, John, from our previous work and work of others, is there is this phenomenon of reduced leaflet motion in bioprosthetic valves, which was ultimately attributed to formation of clot on top of leaflets. And we wanted to find out how common is this in a large cohort of patients. If this is a finding that affects clinical outcomes, does it affect the functioning of a valve and valve hemodynamics? And is it something that is treatable with anticoagulation using especially the novel oral anticoagulants?
Okay. So you have a previous study looking at incidence, but it was smaller, and this one was a larger study.
That is correct, John. In our first publication in the New England Journal of Medicine, the incidence varied depending upon the cohort of patients we looked at. It was a total of 187 patients. The incidence was high in the IDE cohort, 40%, and then in the two registries, which are now expanded, the incidence was about 11-12%. I think one of our major goals was to find out how common or how prevalent is this finding in a large cohort of patients, and the current sample size of close to 900 patients we thought was a good number to actually come up with a reliable estimate.
Tell us about these four-dimensional CT scans.
Well, putting it very simply, 4D CT scans are done using high-resolution or second-generation CT scanners, and most companies actually have them. And it is the acquisition protocol. So you have to have a technologist who knows how to acquire these images. So basically, you're acquiring images at different time points in a cardiac cycle. So you can actually see the leaflets open, leaflets close. That tells you whether the leaflet motion is restricted or not.
And how did you define subclinical thrombosis? It's not just seeing a clot, is it?
Well, what we did here was basically the first thing that we do is we look at the two-dimensional echo, three-dimensional volume rendered images,
okay,
and also four-dimension. And what you're doing is you're looking for reduction in leaflet motion, at least 50% reduction. So the leaflet has the inability to open. And then corresponding to that, on two-dimensional images and three-dimensional images, you're looking for presence of what are called hypoattenuated lesions. They look like black blobs on top of leaflets.
Okay. And you asked a number of clinical questions, so let's get into the results. The first, I guess, is the incidence.
That's correct. Incidence. So the first thing that we found was that overall in this cohort of close to 900 patients, this was present about 12% of the times. The second thing that we observed was that this was present more often in transcatheter heart valves than in surgical aortic valves. Now, it's important to point out that these patients were different. Patients who got surgical aortic valves were younger, that they had less comorbidities, and it's quite possible that the comorbidities can affect the clotting system and actually lead to this phenomenon. So it's an unmeasured confounder. The true estimate of whether this is truly more common in surgical valves will come from some of the imaging sub-studies that are incorporated in the low-risk studies that are ongoing.
Okay, but there are theoretical reasons why a transcutaneous valve.
Sure. The theoretical reasons could be crimping of the leaflets, the fact that you leave the old valve behind, and there may be alterations in flow patterns, etc. But I think it is very important to put these findings in proper context.
Right.
So I think when you look at the results of randomized clinical trials that are testing surgical aortic valve replacement versus transcatheter aortic valve replacement, and you're seeing, if anything, better outcomes, okay, lower death rates and lower stroke rates, with transcatheter aortic valve and equal durability, I think you have to look at this as one variable.
Okay. Second thing, let's get into the anticoagulation effects and
yes,
antiplatelets. Tell us about that.
Well, John, as you know, the current recommendations of the American College of Cardiology are that you should use dual antiplatelet therapy. It's not based on a lot of evidence, but those are the recommendations. Now, what we found in our analysis was that dual antiplatelet therapy did not really significantly reduce the incidence of this. This was prevalent 15% of the times in patients who were on dual antiplatelet therapy. In contrast, when patients were treated with anticoagulants, the risk of this was about 3.6%. So significantly lower. And also what we found that NOACs have traditionally not been very good at treating valve-related issues. True, those were mechanical valves.
Right.
All right, these are tissue valves. So for the first time in a large data set, we can say that at least, you know, it prevents this finding of subclinical leaflet thrombosis.
Now, there was also effect, interesting, on initiation of anticoagulation in patients who had the thrombosis.
Yes. So this was an observational study, I think, and partly I believe that that is the beauty of the study, because it allows us to do different things based on what the patient, the doctor, wanted done or needed to be done. So we were able to look at different things. So we had 36 patients who had this finding, and we treated them with anticoagulation. And what we found was that when we treated them with anticoagulants, this finding disappeared.
In what percent?
All of them.
All of them.
All 36 patients. In contrast, we had 22 other patients where we had this finding, where we did not treat them with anticoagulation for a variety of reasons. And in 20 out of 22, the finding persisted. So, telling us that if you don't treat this, it is likely to persist.
Now, what about if you treat them for a period of time, but then how long, and then when you stop, what happens?
Well, you know, the data are limited. I want to start with that statement. What we know is that when we treated these patients for 3 months, because that's what we did, the finding disappeared. But disturbingly, there were 8 patients that we brought back for repeat follow-up CT after that, and in half of these patients, the finding had actually come back. So that tells me that at least 3 months of treatment may not be enough in all of these patients. And I think this is a big question. I think that needs to be answered.
Small numbers, but provocative nonetheless.
That's correct.
What about, let's go into the effect on valve function and possibly even and in clinical outcomes.
Yes. So valve function, because when you look at these images, John, they look very dramatic. So the question is, does it really show up on echocardiogram, which is what we normally use for surveillance? And this is what we observed, that you can have a leaflet completely stuck, but the echo gradients may actually be normal, all right? What we observed as a group was that there were small increases in gradients, okay? So the gradient went up by about, as a group, in patients that had this phenomenon, up by about 5 millimeters of mercury. What we also observed is that it was more common for a new increase in gradient. So, you know, 15% of patients who had this finding had a new increase in gradient by 10 millimeters of mercury compared to 1% of patients who did not have this finding. But this also, looking at the other side of the equation, it tells us that almost 85% of the patients had gradients that would be considered normal. So if you're just using echocardiogram, you are going to miss this finding.
And then there was some data on clinical outcomes and associations.
That's correct. I think, to me, it is a relief, being a very busy TAVI operator and using this technology, that there was no impact on death and MI. There was no significant difference in terms of strokes. The strokes were numerically higher, but not statistically different. And you could say that if you can show statistical difference in 1,000 patients, that's very reassuring. But TIAs were higher, and they were statistically higher irrespective of how we looked at, whether since the time of the TAVR, excluding the first 72 hours, where TIs and strokes may be because of other reasons, or just taking into account TIAs that occurred after CT scans were done. But nonetheless, these are just associations. We are not proving a causation here in terms of this finding and TIAs.
So you had some interesting clinical implications. Let's go over some of those.
Yes. So I think my first takeaway from this is If you're doing TAVI in your patients, and if your patients are elderly patients that are at increased risk of bleeding, you could make the argument that monotherapy was as effective as dual antiplatelet therapy, and you can do away with dual antiplatelet therapy. Quite a conclusion to derive from a study that actually talks more about anticoagulants being effective. The second conclusion is that in younger patients, perhaps we ought to be thinking, I cannot make the recommendation that we should routinely give anticoagulation, but I think this is time to start thinking about using anticoagulation in some of these patients. And perhaps I think the right thing to do is to do clinical trials that test routine anticoagulation, routine CT strategies, and see what actually makes sense.
And I want to get you to think about the most provocative question, and that is if there's gradients and subclinical thrombosis, does this say anything about longevity of tissue valves?
Well, it's very interesting, John, that you bring this up because I think we can put this in context of, for example, a study that came out of the Mayo Clinic a few months ago, looking at the valves that the surgeons had explanted for clinical reasons. And in about 12% of those valves, the primary reason ended up being thrombus. All right, so after the surgeons took it out, they realized there was actually thrombus. So just being aware of this finding is important because you can treat these patients with blood thinners and don't have to really explant the valves. So that brings us to the issue of durability. So the data are thought-provoking. Is this a mechanism for, given that there is a small increase in gradients and given that more patients with this finding actually had a greater increase in gradients, does this affect long-term durability? And I think it's an open question. I'd like to speculate, but I don't think I can.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on your study.
Thank you very much, John.